The first dog that I loved, though I did not love her as much as I loved Skye, was called Bisto. And it was a West Highland Terrier. And that was the first dog we had when I was growing up at home in Yorkshire, where dogs were a very, very big part of our life because my dad was a vet.
Well, it's funny because I've written that down here, that there was a very strong chance that today's guest was going to have an affinity with dogs and probably other animals, because you are the son of a Scottish vet, and that's something I didn't know about you. So did Dad's job mean that there were a lot of animals in your lives growing up?
Yeah, there were, and I think it probably meant that I didn't like them very much, because for two reasons. One was, you know, it takes your dad away from you a lot. Although I did go around on his rounds on the, so I probably preferred the big animals because I used to go around with him on his rounds to farms where it was all horses and cows. My dad was a bit of a horse specialist. And also because the surgery, he had a surgery, he had two surgeries. One was in Keighley opposite the swimming pool and another one in Bingley. And the smell was not nice. And I'll tell you one of the things was, I don't know if they still do this, but there was a little kind of hut or a hutch just after you walked up the back, when you went through the kind of back door. And it was where they kept all the, you know, the bodies that had been put down. And I think they were only collected every few days. The smell was a bit, so I had that sense of, I wasn't a big dog or cat. Well, I've never been a cat fan, but I wasn't that big a dog fan. I was a cow. I liked cows. I quite liked sheep because I worked on farms as well quite a lot when I was older. Lots of my uncles were farmers. And so I wasn't a big dog person really until quite recently.
Okay. So did you ever consider becoming a vet yourself?
No, because I just wasn't. I mean, my thing was languages, and I was never, ever any good at sciences. And so it was, my dad, they had four kids, my mum and dad, and I think they probably were a bit disappointed that none of us went down that route. Not even close, by the way. I mean, we all went down the kind of languages, music. My sister was a teacher. And so it was like, you know, I think he probably felt, something went wrong there.
So Skye is the first King Charles Cavalier Spaniel that we've met.
Oh.
In this series.
Right, well, it's not the first we've had.
Ah, okay. So what attracts you to that breed in particular?
Well, I'll tell you the story to how we got a dog. And, I mean, I've got to be honest, I was really not keen. And it's a story that I'm sure is very, very familiar to many parents of young children, particularly girls. And our daughter, Grace, became, frankly, utterly obsessed with the idea of getting a dog. I mean, obsessed. To the point of once Fiona and I had been away somewhere, we came back, and every single drawer, every single bit of the fridge, every single bookshelf, every single, any door that you opened at any point, anywhere, just said, I want a dog. Or on a post-it, or it said, dog is God backwards.
She's got a point.
She has got a point. And I just kept saying, no, we won't. I know what will happen. Classic story. You'll just, you know, get bored with it, want something else, move on, and we'll end up having to deal with it. Or more likely, Fiona would end up having to deal with it. And that sort of is, that's your dog, by the way.
That is my dog growling, yes.
And that sort of is what happened. However, the other thing that happened, and this was a big surprise, is that Fiona absolutely fell besotted with Molly, who was Skye's predecessor.
Right.
And Molly became like just a huge part of everybody's life, but particularly Fiona's. Now, to be fair to Grace, she still was very, very close to Molly and is to Skye, but Fiona kind of totally took over. And then Molly died through there, and that was a bit of a grim day for everybody. And then we sort of thought about whether to get another one straight away, whether to wait.
That's a difficult balance. It is
a difficult balance. I was surprised? I wasn't surprised how upset Fiona was. I think I was a bit surprised by how upset I was. And just partly because of the upset she was going through. But I sort of knew that, because I'd seen it so often, that's what I did remember from my childhood, is seeing people who were having their animals put down and how upset they were. But then you see them a couple of days later and they seemed okay. It wasn't like, I don't think it's quite the same as losing a human being. I think people do get over it.
I haven't had to experience that yet because Spot's only four. And right. So I pushed that to the back of my mind.
But anyway, we got another one pretty quickly. And this has been difficult for Fiona as well, because Skye, I have to say, I think thinks I'm the leader.
Oh.
Even though Fiona does all the food and most of the poo bags and all that stuff, but I am the one that she comes to.
Okay.
And Molly never did that. Molly was always Fiona 1, Grace 2, me 3. And I'd say with Skye, it's me 1, Fiona 2, Grace 3.
Ah, right. So Skye, and obviously I've been reading in your book actually about your... Oi!
Now there's Skye just getting a bit territorial.
Yeah, and that's, you know, dogs are territorial. And but they were doing fine, weren't they?
Very well, yeah.
And I have brought my dog into her home, patch. Her patch. Yeah. And so she's just going, hey, you, back off, buddy. Yeah. It's okay, Skye. He won't be here for long, I promise. Now, I was saying, reading your book, and I'm well aware of your Scottish background, although you were actually, as you mentioned, sort of exiled in Keighley, if you like. But Skye is somewhere that is very meaningful for you, isn't it, as a place?
Well, not so much that Scotland is. And it's funny, isn't it, about naming dogs? When around about that time, I mean, Skye, it's funny, Fiona always says when people say, oh, what's the dog called? She says Skye, as in the island.
Yes.
Because we both...
With an E.
With an E, as in the island, because she's sort of... We both labour under this fear that people might think that we've named it after one of Rupert Murdoch's media outlets. So she always says Skye, as in the island. And it is partly that sort of... Molly absolutely loved the Scottish Highlands. Skye loves the Scottish Highlands. And around the time that this was all happening... Tessa Jowell, who's a very good friend of ours, she was dying, and I played Over the Sea to Skye at her funeral.
On the bagpipes.
And so Skye just sort of felt right, really. So it's not that we've got a particular affinity with Skye, we've got a particular affinity with, and it's a nice, with that area, and we've got a particular affinity with Scotland and the music bit and what have you. So, yeah, Molly had a very kind of traditional... Didn't really think about it much, sort of name. I think that was Grace's choice, and Skye was much more of the moment.
Yeah.
It suits her, though. She's very...
What sort of personality has she got?
She's a bit of a tart. She runs up to everybody. She loves everybody.
She was very friendly, I have to say, when I walked into the house.
She's incredibly friendly. She is very, very friendly with everybody. She's a bit wild at the moment.
Is that you just letting her get away with Lou Murdo?
No, I think... Fiona's theory is that we got her a little bit older than we got Molly. So Molly we got sort of very, very young. Skye was, she wasn't old, but she was a few weeks old. But anyway, she's definitely much more kind of... She's got a bit of the devil in her. And we had a terrible, terrible incident on holiday where she just went through... She suddenly... got into this whole kind of water phase. If she saw water, she wanted to be in it.
Okay. Sounds familiar.
Well, but it hadn't been like that much. She'd occasionally sort of dive into a pond or whatever, but not. She wasn't sort of, crazy for it. And she was just going through that phase where she was, and I actually was not there. I was doing something else, and I suddenly got this phone call from Fiona in a complete panic, saying Skye's fallen down a ravine. And what had happened is she'd seen this very... trickle of a waterfall, knew that it went somewhere, so decided to bloody, slide down the waterfall into the water. Fiona couldn't get down to her, so she phones me. I get down to this place. It was pretty horrific. First of all, we couldn't even see her. Then eventually we heard her. She wasn't exactly whimpering, but she wasn't happy. It was like a bit of a whimper. And then, stroke of luck, I just sort of saw her through all this kind of foliage and bushes and trees and everything. And she was just kind of standing there, kind of looking a bit petrified. And so Fiona went on this long kind of, she went round a sort of sensible way, trying to work her way through all these. And her legs were shredded by, literally shredded.
Me.
And I just thought I'd try and go down the same way that Skye did. And so I climbed down, grabbing onto branches as I went. And then I got to the end, and it literally was the end. So the next 10 feet, there was nothing for me to hold onto. And of course, I didn't know how deep it was.
Oh, goodness.
So I'm thinking, do
my
I dive
in? Been pounding. I would be
Well, it was
panicking.
Sort of, I knew she was fine, though. I knew she was fine because I could hear her and she was, I could see her. She was absolutely fine. Fiona was sort of screaming quite a lot. First of all, screaming for Sky, where are you, sort of thing. But then, and then Fiona somehow got through all these, well, I say somehow, with all these, what are you doing up here? Your dog is now walking on my table. If Fiona came in
Spot.
Now, that dog would be in real trouble. She's now looking at the camera.
This is not how to win
my
friends
dog,
and influence
my
people.
My dog is behaving. Oh.
Yes, you tell him off, Skye. That was
yeah,
Skye telling him off
well.
For climbing on
the
table.
I don't think Skye likes him being near me.
No, but you see, Spot has... I've interviewed a few people who have been kind enough to appear on our podcast, and Spot has this habit of immediately trying to ingratiate himself with the guest and
well,
sitting
you, Scott,
on their lap.
I'm a one dog man.
Yes, so and I don't blame you at all. We're trying to encourage Skye to come and sit on the bench with us as well. Oh, there we go. Up she comes. Now, Spot, just
you behave.
You can sit with me. There we go. There you go. All's love.
What do you think?
All's fair in love and war.
Oh my God! I've got the wrong dog on my lap.
You have got the wrong dog on your lap.
What do you want,
Spot? You are just being incredibly.
You're a bigger tart than Skye, as you are.
You're being incredibly cheeky, but all was well with the Skye and the ravine down the ravine.
Well, eventually it was, but it was a bit. It really was a bit of a. And then what happened was that Fiona got down, and then obviously having got down, sort of knew there was a way back. It sounds crazy, this, but actually getting back the way I went down was not easy because the branches that I'd been, some of which I'd been on, some of them came out as I held them. So, yeah, it was one of those sort of, and of course, when we got back, she was absolutely fine.
Thank goodness for that.
Fiona's legs were literally shredded.
Oh, that's just, yeah. that's too hard on yeah. her, isn't it? But she was,
but
you
she
were
does
okay.
that. And then, you know, like the other day, she's two now, and we still, if we go for a walk in the heath, tend to put the bells on her.
Right, so you just know where she is.
Just so we can sort of at least have a sense of where she is. Yeah. We have lost her a couple of times.
I have lost Spot once. One Sunday morning, he just somehow, he's a bit like Houdini, this dog, managed to get out the garden somehow. I have no idea. And he just went missing. And I was then on the phone to, not 999, because I wouldn't do that, but the yeah. other police number you ring. And about just as I was, a lady answered the phone and she was about to, and I was obviously in a slightly heightened state of panic by this point. And I thought, well, I better ring them just in case somebody else has reported a dog of his yeah. description missing. We could put the jigsaw puzzle together. And she was about to say, is it a child or a dog that's missing? And I literally went, oh, he's back. And she went, dog. I went, yes, sorry. I'm really sorry. He's back. I'm sorry to bother you. She's fine. It's fine. You're not the first person he's called.
No, I'm sure that's
true. With the missing
dog.
We had
another one. She got another time she sort of vanished and I don't know. I think she's got, I'm much, much more relaxed when we're out and about. As soon as, like the other day, we were in Regent's Park and she sort of, we were about 100 yards from the road, but she went in that direction and Fiona was like, straight after, because she's convinced she's just going to jump out in front of a car one day.
Yeah, I don't think dogs have, they don't have any sense of cars.
Well, she jumps at them, is the problem. She
yeah,
does jump
spots,
at them.
Spots a little bit like that. Fortunately, we haven't got too many of those where we live. When you are out walking on the heath around here, do you get the sense that people come up and coo over Skye because they secretly want to come and chat to you about politics?
No, I don't. I honestly don't. I think people who want to talk about politics or anything else will anyway.
Right.
Actually, and funny enough, we did a thing at the BBC this morning. Fiona was saying that more people now probably talk to me about mental health than when we're out and about walking. And whether it's that, and partly I think the thing with the dog, I always find it really weird that people assume that because you're with a dog, you can just go up and start, particularly now with COVID and everything.
Yes.
You know, so I think it's, but there's no doubt there's a sort of sense of if you've got a dog, people feel emboldened to say whatever they want. So no, I don't think it's about that. I think also she is just one of those dogs that people like the look of.
She has got an exceptionally sweet face and she's got a very gentle nature.
There was a guy, we were out walking yesterday and this young guy, he was only about, It just didn't look like a kind of dog person to me. He was like, a young, quite hip sort of 25-year-old. And he walked past us and then he came back and said, I've got to say that's the most beautiful dog I've ever seen.
Oh, that's rather lovely though, isn't it?
But I think she is as well. I do sort of think she's a bit special.
But she has been politically active, I noticed, because you took her on a protest against Brexit.
She hates Brexit. She does hate Brexit. And
she hates you talking about it all the time.
I'm sure she does. No, but we were in Germany last week getting the worming and all that stuff to get the
dog passport stamp.
And she's got a lot of stamps in her passport. And to be fair, I think it is still very unclear. And this German vet didn't have a clue what was happening after Brexit. So, no, she's been on quite a few rallies.
How was she? Because she was only a puppy when you took her on that march against
Brexit. She loved it
because
she just likes being people coming up to her and stroking her and playing with her and talking to her. I've never seen her turn on anybody. She does occasionally turns on other dogs but I think that's about getting to us.
Yeah, their dogs are very protective of their humans.
But no, she loved all that.
It did tickle me. Apparently, I read that there were bollards with pictures of Nigel Farage on, and dogs do what they do.
I think there was Farage, Johnson, Rees-Mogg, and Gove. I think it was where you could choose who your dog could pee on.
Well, have you made actually? Of number 10's always had a cat, hasn't it? Suddenly, number 10's got a dog. Dylan, the dog's arrived.
Yeah, I've got to say, he doesn't look at home with it.
Bit like him holding his son in a papoose.
Yeah, he doesn't look at home with the dog. I mean, I don't think this government does much without thinking through a little bit of PR consequence. He doesn't look at home with his dog, I don't think.
Because on your protest, it led to headlines, Brexit's barking, and it was kind of photo opportunities.
Wolferendum,
yes, yeah, I quite like that.
Yeah, that was just one guy I met him up in Sheffield. He just had the idea of, It was, anyway, we failed.
Now, there's also a black...
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Dog that kind of lives with you, and it's a very puzzling metaphor for mental health because I always view dogs as something that they're extremely positive.
Yeah.
Have you ever any idea where that's...
Churchill.
Well, you see, I don't want to sort of correct
true?
You. Well, no, but there are clearly references to Churchill in Black Dogs, and I think Churchill was somebody who...
I mean, he coined the phrase black dog.
No, well, you see, apparently, because I was reading up on this,
right.
The mention of black dog, it was a guy called Samuel Johnson, who was the first author of the dictionary.
Okay.
In the 1700s.
Okay.
Actually mentioned the black dog.
Oh, wow. I'm learning.
So I thought I would just kind of look that up because it intrigued me as to where it
came from. And was he defining depression as the black dog?
Yes, there was. It certainly was in reference to mood.
I thought that was quite interesting.
I mean,
I can see if you were somebody who loved dogs and didn't think dogs could ever do bad things, then I can see why you might think it's a bad description. But I actually think it's quite a good description because it's like a... I mean, black dog, I see it in terms of a dog that you'd be scared of. And a lot of people are scared of dogs. And, to be honest, I haven't told you my childhood bad experience with dogs when I was bitten by a police dog at a football match.
Right, please expand.
Huddersfield against Burnley, I think it was, and I wasn't doing anything wrong, I promise you. I was with my dad, but there was a sort of something going on, and this dog just sort of it wasn't a bad bite, but it bit me, and I can remember my dad, who was a vet, as I say, in the car park. Getting his stuff out to kind of, treat my this sort of... But I just remember thinking, well, that was a bit scary.
Yeah.
So whether that put me off dogs for a bit, I don't know. But where were we going?
The black dog.
So I think if the sense of the black dog as depression being kind of a bit of a wild animal that you don't really want around you, That's what I thought it meant, but I could be wrong. Maybe Johnson and Churchill had totally different. I think, and I think people do see the depressive mood as always being very black. Although, you know, I can see why, because it is, you know, you talk about having dark feelings and not being able to see the light and all that sort of stuff. So I can see where it comes from, but I hadn't really thought of it from the canine perspective as to whether it's a bit anti-dog.
Yes. Well, I don't know. I just, because I've always seen dogs as a positive. So I always wondered how it came to mean a slightly different thing in relation to depression. And you talk in your book about the depression, your depression scale. Mm. How is your mood today? Just explain how you view that scale.
Well, it's sort of something I do almost instinctively now. I don't kind of do it and make a note and tick it off. But when I wake up, my mood is often very dependent on how I feel when I wake up. So if I've slept very badly, if I've had a lot of really bad dreams, if I'm feeling tired, if the black cloud is coming in, then my mood will you know, quite substantially kind of dive. And
so did you give your number to yourself today?
I did, and it was sort of 3 to 4, which is okay.
Which is okay.
Yeah, so 1 is like delirious and 10 is suicidal. And 3, 4 is good. When I get over 5 into the sort of 6, 7, 8 territory, that's when I really start to worry. So no, 3, 4 is good.
And what is a bad day like for you? How would, because I remember in your book, you're very descriptive about how that actually feels. And I think it's for people who haven't lived with depression or know anybody with depression, I think it's quite a hard concept to grasp for people as to how that actually feels for somebody who's in a grip of a depressive episode.
Well, funny enough, I wrote a novel. My first novel was called All in the Mind, and it was about a psychiatrist and his relationship with his patients. And I remember Charlie Faulkner, who was, you know, Lord Chancellor in Tony Blair's government, and he read it and he said, you know what, I've never had depression, and I don't think I've really understood it, but I feel I understand it better now, having read that, because I've described in the novel. And I think part of what I wanted to do with this book was actually to give, if you like, an account of it that wasn't fictional, that was real. And it's quite a hard thing to do, because when I'm not depressed, I can't really remember what it's like being when I'm very depressed, what that feels like. So I've been thinking about it while I was writing the book, and I was almost at the times longing to be depressed, so I could sort of get a better feel for it. But in terms of what it feels like, it's never the same, but there are certain sort of patterns to mine. I mentioned this, you know, I'm doing it now. I always look up to the left when I think about my depression, how it's often manifested is as I wake up, just seeing this kind of sort of literally like a 6 times the size of a rugby ball, and it's an oval, and it sort of looks, and it's got a jelly feel to it. It's not hard, and it's coming nearer, and I will usually I'll say, oh, you know, fucking leave me alone, go away. But then what happens is it just sort of comes in, and then it comes a point when I say, okay, I've lost again. And then it literally sort of moves into my body and fills me up. And when it's really bad like that, it's hard to get out of bed.
You said it's even hard to almost speak.
Sometimes speak, yeah, because what I tend to do, I usually can. Most of my life I've been able to sort of power my way through. Yeah. But it's exhausting.
It is exhausting.
It's exhausting. You feel that everything that normally just wouldn't take any energy at all takes loads of energy, and you feel exhausted a lot of the time, but the last time I was really bad was sort of towards the end of lockdown. I had a bit of a bad spell. I didn't have any day where I stayed in bed all day.
Okay,
but I wasn't going out. I was sort of cancelling meetings. I was lying on the sofa a lot. I was just sort of
make a lot of excuses to people potentially, don't you? Just to
Do you know what I think with lockdown? I think in a funny sort of way, it was one of the things I liked about it at the start was the fact that you didn't need to make excuses. Yes. Just say, well, I can't go out. But actually, latterly. It's that thing of you feel I can't face people, I can't face, don't want to talk, don't want to think, don't want to read, don't want to do anything. And now one of the reasons I've written the book is actually I found now in my 60s, I've found lots of different ways that have helped me when that feeling comes on. And I think one of the reasons I've written it is that people maybe in their 20s, 30s and 40s don't have to waste 40 years before they finally get on top of it. And when I say get on top of it, the subtitle of the book is How I Learned to Survive Depression. It doesn't say how I've learned to defeat it.
Yes.
Because I don't feel I ever will. I think it'll always be around. It's just that I've got much, much better. And also, Fiona's got much, much better from her perspective at dealing with her emotions as they're affected by me, which they have been, obviously, for so long.
And that's interesting. What's it like for the people around you when you are having a bad day and depression has taken hold? I include the dog in that, because dogs are very empathetic.
Well, do you know what? It's really interesting you say that, because the last time when it happened, I can remember lying in bed thinking, oh, God, this is a bad one. This is like 7.5 to 8. And I remember thinking, when Fiona gets up, I'll just pretend I'm still asleep. And then she can get upstairs and I can maybe just lie in. And she knew that I was kind of on a bit of a... I wrote a piece about this recently, and somebody, I thought it was a brilliant description. They said, when they go into depression, it's like a downhill slalom. And that's just like, you know, you get up to a bend and you think, maybe I'll turn this bend okay, but you just keep going down.
It's just the momentum, isn't there?
Yeah, it just keeps you going. And but anyway, they're always lying in bed, and literally she jumped up on the bed and just came and started sort of, she wasn't even jumping all over me, she just sort of lay down next to me. And I said to Fiona, I said, she knows, you know.
I'm sure that dogs have this, they just know when something's going on, whether it's you going off on holiday and might be leaving them.
Oh, yeah, or, the thing with bags,
you pick a shopping bag up and they look at you and go, oh, do you have to go now? Mm. You know, they are very clever.
No,
like
and definitely it's, I think having that sort of sense, when I was in that low mood, I was all about, you know, there's the sofa there when I lie down on the sofa and just want to kind of, well, she'll often be lying there with me.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of, I don't know, it's like you've got this companion that literally is asking nothing of you, apart from occasionally go for a walk.
Yeah.
That's it. And of course, the occasionally going for a walk might be the one thing that gets you out and goes and does something.
Because like you, I pop that little white pill every morning, mm-hmm. 50 milligrams of sertraline. And I've had some serious bouts of depression in my life, but also like you, I've come to learn how to cope, how to recognize the triggers. Mm. And something you said in your book about, you know, your mantra of eat well, sleep mm-hmm. well, stay active mm-hmm. has been really key for me, actually. And then the Spot, who I've only had for the last 4 years, but I call him my canine Prozac.
Yeah.
Because actually, he makes me smile, he gives me purpose, he's a reason to get out of bed in the morning. You know, when you've got those, as a freelancer, actually, when you've got those long empty days ahead of you, when you haven't got anything, no live sport in the schedule, you think, well, what am I going to do today? And it's very easy to overthink things and just your mood can dip as a result. And it's just you mentioning sitting on the sofa there and having the dog next to you. It's even just those cuddles that you have, because I'm sitting stroking your dog now, but that ability to just feel the warmth from the dog, it's very reassuring for somebody who might be feeling anxious.
And also,
do
I think
you recognize that?
Totally. And I've seen it. I think she, I think the other thing we both, Fiona and I, get is this sort of strange comfort from these little rituals that she goes through as well. So, for example, in the morning, Molly always used to follow Fiona down, Sky follows me down. But then during lockdown, for example, when we'd come down, have breakfast, gone for a walk, come back, had another coffee, sitting in the kitchen, then Fiona would go up to her office, which is on the next floor. And for some reason, at that point in the day, Sky always went off with Fiona. And then later in the day, if I went up to my office, she comes up with me. And she just sort of plumps herself on these different sofas. And she just sort of, I don't know, she's definitely got a feel for our moods.
Yeah,
she's... And she's a very, even though she is crazy when we go out walking, but, you know, around the house, she's like this all the time.
So how important is the daily dog walk? Because for me, it's all about, it has, not at first. At first, it was because I wanted a dog and I didn't realise actually how profound that could be in terms of getting out into nature and experiencing the seasons and looking at trees and flowers and the river moving and a duck landing, you know, as it comes into land on the Thames, you know. Has that been a big benefit for you when mood is perhaps low?
I think with Molly, the previous dog, it was very much that Fiona went walking twice a day, religiously, and she still does with Skye, but often now I'll go with her.
Mm.
So, but I think that, I mean, I've definitely had moments where I've maybe been feeling really low, and when I see Skye just sort of, you know, when she goes off on one of her, she smells something, she sees something, and she goes, and the little tail's going, and then she just looks, and that happiness definitely sort of plays back to us both.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? When Spot runs flat out, either away from me because he's seen something, he wants a squirrel or whatever, and then I call him to come back, and he fixes on me and just comes straight at me at full pelt,
yeah,
with his little ears flapping.
Yeah,
your heart just melts when you see that, doesn't it?
She's definitely been really good for my moods, and I think also for the family, you know, that she's, because funny enough, when we first, you know, partly because it was, you know, we've got two boys and a girl, and it was Grace that was fighting like hell for this dog. The boys weren't that interested.
I've read about Grace and I've looked at her Instagram, and she seems a force of nature at
the
best of times.
She is definitely a force of nature, but she got the dog. And I think at the start, the boys were a bit kind of, you know, but they've all the family have come to, and actually when Molly died, it was like we were all through there, and it was a very, you know, it really, really felt like a member of the family was dying. It was horrible. And I've got no doubt it'll be the same when she goes, but hopefully a long time off.
Do people talk to you? I mean, we've mentioned it briefly, but do you get that sense of community through the dog when you're out walking?
Yeah, you do. And I mean, I guess we get up very early, we go walking very early. So most of the people on the Heath are either runners or they're also out walking dogs.
The time's really early.
6 will be up and out. That's pretty good. Not much after that. So, and it, you know, you'd be amazed how many people are out by then.
I'm sure I am not a morning person. No, 6 o'clock in the morning feels like the middle of the night to me. I'm like, shut the curtains. I want to go back.
And
to
then
bed.
Fiona goes out again in the afternoon. Sometimes I'll go out with her. But everybody knows each other. And this is actually a pretty, we're very lucky in this street as well. They've got a dog next door. They've got a dog opposite. Actually, there aren't that many dogs. But up on the Heath in the morning, you'll see a hell of a lot of dogs.
I can imagine. It's not somewhere I know very well. But what sort of dog walk is it on Hampstead Heath?
Oh, Hampstead Heath is amazing.
Yeah.
You've got, it's big for a start. I don't know what the exact measurements are, but it's big. A lot of hills. So you've got very, very, very wooded bits, and you've got quite open bits as well. Plus you've got water.
Yeah.
So, you know, no, you can't, you could walk for years on Hampstead Heath without doing the same.
Really?
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Yeah. No, it's really, it is absolutely fantastic.
I'm lucky where I am. You've got no deer there, presumably.
No, but you've got, you've got no deer.
Because I've got two Royal Parks near me, and yeah. He's a terrier, so I have to watch him like a hawk if he's off
I'll
the lead
what,
in a Royal
I'll
Park.
You, I'll tell you though, what Skye loved during the lockdown was because we swim at the Lido on the Heath, and because it was closed, we ended up having to go to the Serpentine, and Skye absolutely loved going for a walk from, we'd park the car on the Bayswater Road, walk down through the park. I don't know what it was about it, whether it was new or whatever, but she loved that park. And then we'd go to swim one at a time, one of us looking after the dog while the other one swam. And normally, as I say, she would run away, but there, for some reason, she would just sit and she could watch us swim without running into the water, and you just sort of stay with the other one while the other one swam. It was kind of, so this, they definitely have a sense of place.
I want to try open water swimming, actually. I haven't done it. Like, you recommend
brilliant.
It?
Definitely.
You do wetsuit or no wetsuit with you?
No wetsuit.
Oh, see, I'm hopeless getting in a bath. Never mind getting into cold water.
I used a wetsuit when I used to do triathlon because you have to.
Yeah, of course. There's no choice, is it?
In the winter, I wear gloves and feet, which do help.
You don't wear a wetsuit in the winter? Even?
No.
Oh.
No, the lighter you do, you can get these sort of quite good thermal head swimming caps.
Oh, okay.
The coldest I think this year was 5. This was my first ever winter.
Okay, with open water swimming.
Well, that was the Lido, and then we went when the the lockdown came and the Lido shut, we were going up to, we're doing either the Thames down in Dockland or up in a lake in Watford. But I really recommend it.
I don't know. Sport is sold on going into any body
aquatic
of
substance.
Water. Yes, yeah. Quite. And I there were a couple of times in the summer where he's just dived into the Thames and just refuses to come out. So I have to now have him. Maybe he's anywhere near water. I have to have him on one of those extendable lead things. So I can let him in, but no, I can always then get him out again.
Last Christmas on our way up to Scottish Highlands, we stopped at Windermere.
Ah.
And we stayed in this little hotel and we took the dog out for a walk. And this, she'd never done this before. So it was like a big kind of shock. She just suddenly took off and chased two ducks sailing, swimming on the bobbing on the Windermere. And Windermere is big, and the ducks knew what they were doing as they sort of teased her along. And I mean, I tend not to panic in these circumstances, but Fiona was really, really panicking, and I was about to dive in. It was freezing.
I can imagine.
It was freezing. When, for some reason, she just got bored, got tired and came back.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah.
No, this one, once he generally gets a stick at the edge of the water and he just paws at it like it's some crocodile he has to kind of repel. And then he barks at it. And I have to keep apologising to people who are walking past going, they go, is he all right? I'm like, no, yeah, this is his idea of fun. I'm really sorry. You came out for a quiet, peace and tranquility, and you've got this terrier.
There was a couple there from, I'm assuming they were from Liverpool because he was wearing an Everton training top. And they both recognised me, and I could see they were, as I was sort of toying with the idea of stripping off and diving in. And I think they were getting their phone ready.
I was about to say they were just going to wait there and see if it was going to happen.
They could have.
You'll never guess who we saw diving into the river.
You'll never guess whose death we just filmed.
Oh, Alice, you've achieved so much in your life. It's almost hard to even begin to list your achievements, but how proud of you are you of the fact that you're helping to change the narrative around mental health and how people
I don't there's two things. I don't feel proud of it.
Why not?
Because
it's something that people just wouldn't talk about. It's like a taboo you're helping people have the confidence.
Well, it's good,
and
I'm happy about that. I'd say I'm happy about that rather than...
I would never have come on something, even though I've got a microphone here and it's kind of my podcast, I wouldn't want to mention that because there's some sense of a weakness in you if you have depression and that people might view
but
you
I think
differently.
I think where I've always been lucky is that partly because of the circumstances of when I first kind of had to confront it, which is when I had a breakdown and ended up in hospital. And I never felt... You see, I never felt that stigma. And I was very lucky. First, Fiona stood by me. Secondly, my old boss took me back into my job. And actually, although newspapers can be a very, very tough environment, at the Mirror, people were really, really good. They knew I'd been through something pretty bad. They didn't quite know what. And I just thought, well, I'll tell them. And so I've never felt that need to hide it. I'll tell you what I'm proud of. I'm proud of the fact that I've had the life that I've had and the different careers that I've had, whilst often having this kind of black dog to deal with.
I think that's the thing that a lot of people don't understand, because I always found in the job that I do, you're almost performing, whether you're on TV or on radio.
And well,
you may have had a day where you feel terrible and you have had to struggle to get up and put the face on and smile. And actually, you have to kind of go into this performance mode and forget how you're feeling. And that sometimes hasn't been easy, to be able to just put a mask on, I think, is the best way of describing
it. I think that's one of the reasons why I've never, ever gone into telly full time. Because I could have done it at various points in my life. I think it is a performance for a lot of people. And interesting enough, during lockdown, I did lots of interviews with different people about how they were coping. And I did one with Jeff Stelling. Sky Sports, Mr. Positive, Mr. Motivator. And of all the people I talked to, I'd say he was the one that seemed to me to be struggling the most. And I know Jeff quite well, but actually what it said to me was, I really only know you through that persona.
Yeah.
Because him talking to me the way that he did, it was obviously he was struggling. And And interestingly, most of the people I talked to reacted in very different to how I thought they would. And there's a very funny, if you dig it out, my son was, Rory, our eldest boy, was, God knows why, but during the lockdown, one of the things he did with his time, he watched all the coverage of all the elections. You know, the BBC Parliament Channel put all those election coverage on. And there's one in the 97 election when we've had the exit poll. We know we're going to win. We know it's going to be bigger than we thought it was going to be. I did an interview up at Sedgefield with John Simpson. And I can remember it. Rory mentioned it. And I can remember it because I was getting text messages galore from people saying, for God's sake, what's wrong with you? Because I was miserable. I wasn't enjoying it. And I couldn't hide it.
Yeah.
So John Simpson was sort of saying, well, it's an amazing victory and da, 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 da. And I said, well, let's just see, shall we?
And this was Blair's first term, presumably.
Very first, yeah. And what had happened was he was...
New Labour and
all that.
Things
are
only going to get better.
Which they did.
Yes.
But, I couldn't get in the mood for it. And likewise, when we got to Festival Hall that night, I felt low. And it's funny, you know, you maybe understand this because if you're interested in sport, the only time that I've ever felt able truly to let myself go with lots and lots of other people is at football. What I felt at that time was that everybody's meant to be feeling that this is fantastic, and I didn't feel it. And I always resent that because, I mean, that should have been like one of the greatest days of my life, and it wasn't.
Yeah, you helped mastermind.
I was miserable. Come on, Danny.
Big moment in British politics, and you couldn't mask it. And you've got many talents, and one of them, actually I was going to say hidden, it's not a hidden talent at all, but you play the bagpipes.
It's not a hidden talent. It's loud.
it's very loud, and which leads me to my next question, because... Oh!
You're not even that, are you? You get off his lap.
Yeah, what was it like the first time Skye heard you play the bagpipes?
Skye loves the bagpipes.
Does she?
Honestly, yeah. Yeah, she did. See?
Oh.
What is it?
Oh.
Because
Spot hates noise.
Right.
The Hoover, the hose. No, if I go and put the ironing board up, he disappears from the kitchen. He's boy, probably he could. He'd put his fingers in his ears most of the time.
It was a first time. I mean, when we go up to Scotland, we stay in this place and I do this thing. You know, the Queen Mother used to be woken every morning by the sound of the bagpipes. Well, I wake everybody up with my bagpipes.
Do you really?
I do, yeah. And when I'm up, everybody's got to get up.
So hang on, set the scene. Where is this place that you're staying?
It's up in the Highlands.
Is this like a family home or is this a
hotel? No, it's
just
a place we rent.
Oh,
a place we rent.
Okay, so the whole family's trying to get some sleep.
They might be, but
Dad's up with the bagpipes.
And what would happen is that, because Fiona and I are pretty early risers, I say, so I think that would be the first time that Skye got used to it. And she never yelped. And I can play. I usually practice up in the bathroom up there. And she'll sometimes come down and she'll happily lie on the floor and just listen.
Wow.
So now
I can't imagine what would happen if you got the bagpipes out and Spot heard that. I think his face would be he would be kind of. What your neighbours? Can your neighbours hear you when you're in the bathroom?
Yeah, they love it.
Oh, do they?
There's a lot of complaining. Honestly, they you can ask them. If I've not played for a few days, they will ring the bell and say, "Why haven't you played the part?" I promise you.
Because there was that marvellous moment during lockdown, where you serenaded your neighbour.
Oh,
same neighbour.
Same neighbour. Yeah.
She's a nurse. She was obviously doing her bit for the NHS, and you went to meet her off the train, I think, did you? And you serenaded her
up the street on a Thursday night. Yeah.
So it wasn't sort of an NHS clap for carers; it was a pipe.
Well,
for carers.
Was during that. It was during that, and then it became a thing that I played the pipes every week, and and then people started bringing out their trumpet and their violin. A guy over the road had a vuvuzela.
The most annoying thing ever heard at a football match, to be fair, the vuvuzela.
The South African World Cup.
It was awful. It was watching it on TV and it felt like there's this herd of bees.
At the moment, I'd take it over the empty stadiums.
That's a really good point you made.
Yeah.
And Skye's on your lap, where I think, you know, she rightfully loves to be.
She's spotted a threat.
Yeah, Spot had made a move for your lap. She warded him off. You know, can you finally just put into words what she means to you?
She's like She's a companion, but she's more than that. She's like sort of, she's just part of us, you know. And particularly Fiona and I, like we, having had this several months in lockdown, I am slightly worried about what's going to happen when we get back to some sort of normal. Fiona and I actually went away last night for the first time. I can't even remember the last time we weren't with her overnight because, you know, when we were on holiday, she was with us. When we were during lockdown here, she was with us 24 hours a day. She sleeps up with us.
That's an interesting one because of lots of the people we've been chatting to, it's quite divided actually as to who's allowed. Some people, dogs are allowed upstairs, others, dogs very much downstairs.
This started with Molly. When Molly first came along, I was adamant the dog is never coming in the bedroom.
Oh,
right?
You caved.
I caved. And then and I didn't cave because I wanted to cave, I caved because Fiona caved and I gave in. And with Skye, it's never even been a question. So, you know, we've been with her 24 hours a day. And funnily enough, yesterday was our first night away because we were up doing the BBC in Breakfast Telly pre-recording. So we went up and Grace was looking after Skye and endlessly sending pictures telling us how happy she was to be without us. And do you know what, though? When we came back, if I'd been out, I go out for an hour and come back, Skye's all over me. She knew that yesterday I went away for longer. And she punished me for about half an hour.
They do that, don't they, the little monkeys?
Half an hour, she just gave me a little look that said, I know what you've been doing. You went away. But what's she going to do when I go back to going to Australia, if we're ever able to do that again? Or, you know...
It's going to be tough.
Yeah. But we get a lot of pleasure out of her happiness. And she's a spoiled dog. I mean, she's absolutely... She has a great life.
It's a great pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
Good luck with the book, and thank you for letting us meet Skye.
Look at her. She's a tart. She knows that there's a camera there. Who's that?